It was loud. The whole house shook. And I thought, well, geez, there might be some jets from Selfridge breaking the sound barrier, sonic boom-like. What was going on? And then I found out the rest of the story, that our former Detroit mayor, Mike Duggan, was dropping his independent bid for our great state's governorship. I would have bet $1 billion he would never do that. I might have bet $1 billion that he might even be the winner and do a great job running the great state of Michigan. But I didn't think about all the things that he thinks about. I didn't think about the fact that we still have that ridiculous idea in Michigan where you can just hit one button and vote for all of one party. So you don't have to think or even know who else is running because you voted Republican or you voted Democrat. That's gotten us really far, hasn't it? Well, he must have thought of that. And he knows the waves are going against the Republicans, and he was depending on some Republican votes to be able to get in there as an independent. And as it turns out, the Democrats are all getting together hating President Trump. And so he looked at a loss of votes there. Very practical man, Mayor Duggan. And he kind of said, why throw good money after bad at this point? Money's hard enough to come by, especially from the national people who are affecting our elections. Thank you very much, national people who don't give a damn about Michiganders or Michiganians. And so now we have one less highly qualified, excellent person in the race for governor. And behind closed doors, the gleeful celebration is underway. Because both sides were scared of that man, and for good reason. Maybe even the Democrats will say nice things about him again. Who knows if they can be that smart or not. But I, for one, am very disappointed to hear that it has come to this. I called him right away, did not get him. We are told he will make an announcement, press conference-like thing at 1:30. We've moved things around on this show to, if in fact that happens, carry it live. It is, as somebody said, it's the most consequential thing that's happened in Detroit and Michigan politics this year. No, I'm afraid it is one of the most consequential, important things that has ever happened in politics in Michigan. Ever. It's, yes, that big a deal. But again, if on those betting things that I'm totally against, people bet on everything, if there was a bet out there, I would have put $1 billion on it if I did that sort of thing, saying he was going to stay. And he is not. And I don't think, Mike, anything can change that. I think if you go out and make this kind of an announcement, that's it. It's a done deal.
Oh, yeah. There's no going back. And, you know, Paul, there's not much that shocks us, but I was shocked when I saw this. I was driving, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw the notification that says drops out of gubernatorial race. And then when I was stopped, I went down and looked at it, and I saw Mike Duggan's name. And I actually gasped because I'm like you. I was certain this was going to be a three-person race come November. And so I'm sure we're going to learn more at 1:30 when we hear directly from Mike Duggan. But, you know, I wasn't sure if he was going to win, but I thought if anybody could win as an independent, it was him. Because right. The way he became mayor of Detroit seemed impossible too, right?
Right. Yep.
He was a guy from outside the city. He was blocked from being on the ballot, so he literally knocked on doors and won as a write-in. So I said, well, if he could do that in the city of Detroit, then this seems less impossible than that. But, you know, Mike Duggan is you know, he was a generational mayor, and he's one of the more astute political minds of our time. Absolutely. And so he probably saw something that we didn't and said, look, we might be spinning our wheels here.
He had to look at it in a way that we don't, and we didn't, obviously. And we certainly didn't see it the way he clearly saw it. And I bow to his knowledge because he's brilliant. He's the best at these sorts of things. So the first thing, I worried that he was sick. I worried there was something else going on. That's
right.
Because I like him as a person very, very much. I've known him for a very long time through several jobs, his jobs. And that's what my main concern was initially. Oh, no, what's wrong with him?
Right.
But so far, it is straight down the line talking about campaign financing and the reality of the way the nation is kind of going over to this side because the president, unfortunately, has handled many things in a awkward fashion, I'll say. Many of the things he's done has been right. It's just I've never seen anyone take something that's so good or so right and gum it up. But he does, and those of us who support him have had to learn to deal with that. But Mike Duggan looked at the big picture in Michigan. I really hate to hear that he was having trouble getting national money. What the hell is national money doing coming in to pick the governor of our state?
Right. And I don't know if there's just more money in national money. And if it's state money, you don't have as much funding as if you get funded on the national side.
They should have no say.
I agree.
About who is running or getting that position.
Right.
Because they're not around. They don't give a rat's behind about us. They're doing it for their own reasons that have everything to do with the party. And the problem in this country is the one that Mike Duggan pointed out. The party has become more important than we the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just bad. And there's just now another move to make that continue to be the case.
And Paul, I'm very curious to see what Duggan does next, because I think he will, you know, he'll pivot to something else, and whatever it is, he's going to
be great.
Yeah,
he'll
and be great. It'll be very impactful. So,
yeah.
Shocking news, but I'm also optimistic and excited to see what he takes on next.
We will be again standing by, hoping that at 1:30 there is a press conference, and we will carry it here. The Paul W. Smith Focus, so Relentless Positive Radio. Mike Parsons, Daniel Mason, Rich Luzinski. Happy birthday to you if it's your birthday. You celebrate it with one of our family members, Ava DeMangia, one of our top salespeople, celebrating. Ava DeMangia celebrating her birthday today. Stephen Colbert, last show tonight. I'll watch because I do watch live television. It's not really live, but I will watch that. It's live on tape. They did something the other day that was so distasteful. David Letterman and Stephen Colbert. David was a guest on Stephen Colbert. Stephen Colbert was paying tribute to David Letterman because he started that time period, The Late Show. And I saw what was coming a million miles away. Letterman's sitting on the furniture, goes, this is nice. Who owns this? Do you own this? No, CBS owns this. Oh, CBS owns it. So he has a couple of guys come in and carry the furniture out. I know what's coming next. Actually, I thought they were going to set it on fire. But what they did was more in line with Letterman. They threw the furniture off the roof and destroyed it. Now, you know what, folks? Here's the thing. It was not funny to me. It was upsetting because we were looking at two men who became multi-millionaires because of CBS. They were handed bushel baskets of money, and they were biting the hand that fed them so well. And that's a trend in our country as well that's not so agreeable. So I'll just mention that because, frankly, David Letterman, who will die wishing he took over for Johnny Carson, or Stephen Colbert, neither one of them had one quarter, not a pinky amount of the talent that Johnny Carson had. Sorry, guys. It's just a fact. All right. On your way to making each and every day count, each day is a gift, and thanks for choosing to be an important part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. Don't take it from me. Take it from the Michigan Association of Broadcasters. We are the top station around. Period. We continue on WJR. Well, I have too many papers on my desk, and I can't find the story that I had printed set aside. I have a bunch of it memorized, however. One thing I'll say is I don't understand the institutional media. The big deal they made out of hantavirus, way overblown, and now how they're not making a big deal out of Ebola. I don't understand that at all, because Ebola is a far greater risk than you'd ever know. It was an airplane ride away from coming into Detroit. David Shepherdson covers transportation, autos, and aviation for Reuters. Of course, he was formerly with the great Detroit News. David, always a pleasure to catch up. Can you hear me, David?
Can you hear me, Paul? Yeah.
Yeah, I can now. Sure.
Okay.
Nice to catch up with you.
You too. Yeah, no, it's another year, another virus to be concerned about.
Okay. We're just making sure we have everything connected the way it needs to be. I didn't hear just now exactly what you said.
Oh, Paul, is that better now? Are we in a better spot?
Yes, yes.
Oh, sorry.
You know, we accept so many bad things from our cell phones. Why do you think we do that? If any other appliance we had worked, if you went to the washing machine and 3 out of 5 times it didn't work, you'd go crazy.
I know the telecom companies are trying. They've got to add more spectrum and make the signals better. But you're right. No, unlike our cars, our airplanes, right? Imagine if any of those, or you said washing machines, failed. Well, look, you know, this is interesting about Ebola, because back in 2014, the White House did something similar. It said all travelers could only go to 5 airports. So this time it does something interesting, and it comes right after this diversion you mentioned last night of this Air France flight to Montreal. Starting today, if any Americans been in Uganda, the Democratic Republic of Congo, or South Sudan within the last 21 days, they can only fly to Dulles, that Washington Dulles, to re-enter the United States, where they're going to undergo enhanced screening and testing to make sure that they don't have Ebola. And so this has been done in the past, although never to just one airport. I think it does speak to, you know, the resources necessary. But look, you know, what happened last night is that somebody from the DRC was on that flight and should not have been, under the rules that were imposed on Monday. And then in an abundance of caution, that flight got diverted because, you know, starting Monday this week, any non-U.S. citizen who has been in the DRC, Uganda, or South Sudan within the last 21 days is not allowed to enter the U.S. And that's because that's the incubation period for Ebola. So the authorities are confident that anybody who was there more than 21 days ago would be showing symptoms of Ebola. And if they don't, then they would be safe to come here.
David Shepherdson, Reuters, we're talking about that flight that was Detroit-bound. Yeah. I'm not going to say there wasn't some good work. There obviously was some good work, but there was also a tremendous amount of luck. And we can't be certain we're ever going to be that lucky again. And we can't depend on people following the rules. You know, someone's going to say, I'm not sick. I got to get there or here. And I'm not going through Washington. People will come up with all kinds of excuses. But you know what? The first thing I thought of, honestly, David, was how the heck would you like to be living in Montreal and saying, wait a minute, they won't accept this person in the United States, but they're going to land in my town?
Now, hopefully, the good news is we don't know for sure because they haven't said everything, is hopefully this person does not have Ebola, that it's just they were in the country and they're at high risk and therefore they triggered that prohibition from last Monday that said you can't come here within because you were in the Congo in the last 31 days. That does not apply to Americans or permanent residents. So, again, we don't know enough yet about what, if any, symptoms that, or maybe they don't have any, that this traveler had. But what we know for sure is that they got on the flight, And as that flight was coming to the U.S., customs looked at the manifest, realized that person was not allowed to enter the United States, and then in an abundance of caution said to Air France, you know, you have to divert. You can't enter the United States. So it does speak to sort of how strict the administration, how serious they're taking this.
Yeah.
You know, even because we don't know if that person does have Ebola or not.
Hey, quick note here, David Shepherdson of Reuters. Yeah. You do such a good job. It's great to have you back. A sinkhole on the runway at LaGuardia. It's my job to worry. Can you imagine if that was not discovered and a plane hit that?
Yeah, it's I don't know if you've seen the video yet. It's right on the edge of the runway, but it's definitely disconcerting. You don't want to be on that runway or on a plane, you know, coming down that runway at 110 miles an hour or so and having a tire go that. What's surprising to me is that it got discovered at 11 a.m.
Well, I love the fact that they actually go out and inspect the runway every day. Who knew?
Yeah, no, and it does speak to, you know, everybody in aviation. You think about the pilots that walk around their planes every day. I mean, everybody takes this really seriously, but you're right. Pretty scary, and it might not even be done today. They're hoping it'll be finished, but they might not resume the use of the runway until Friday there.
And
so
of
I hope you're not flying to LaGuardia.
Well, the other point, frankly, is if it could happen there, it could happen anywhere.
You better believe every airport's like redoubling their runway inspections after that.
And I don't know if you can tell from just the surface, if it hasn't already happened, that there's a potential sinkhole there.
I think that's a good question. I think it depends, right? How careful is that inspection? Are there any warning signs? Is it like a Michigan road that freezes and thaws so many times and is just susceptible to potholes, right?
Keep up the good work, David.
Thank you, Paul Dobby. Have a great holiday weekend.
Oh, the same for you. May it be a memorable Memorial Day for you and yours and for all listening. David Shepherdson. Shepherdson, he covers transportation, autos, and aviation for Reuters, formerly with the award-winning Detroit News. As we continue in Focus with Paul W. Smith at WJR. As we continue with the biggest news in a very long time, politically the biggest news, and it is a story that is sending shockwaves through the Michigan political world, without any question, the former great mayor, Mike Duggan, who has been running as an independent in this year's gubernatorial race, has dropped out, citing, among other things, a lack of financial support and a poor showing in polls, basically based on the way the country is reacting to Washington and the president. WJR's Marie Osborne has more for us. Marie, you and I have covered this man in all of his different jobs for years. I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I'm a fan of Mike Duggan's, and I'm sorry to see this.
Well, this has really, really shaken up this gubernatorial race, that's for sure. And a lot of people are asking what is happening next with Mike Duggan, that's for sure. So we get some insight into this letter that he released this morning to his supporters. He says he no longer believes he can win in November. And just like you said, he's citing the shifting political winds and difficulty in raising national campaign funds. So let's start with what he said in the letter. Governor's campaigns today are funded overwhelmingly from well-established networks of national party money, which is why I've been all across America meeting with national groups to try to build competitive fundraising networks for independents. There is much interest, but we finally concluded the national fundraising for these groups is too much in its infancy to be any help in the race in 2026. So that's talks about a little bit about that money. He says, or his decision comes just over 5 months before this big general election and days after a poll showed him trailing in third place between Republican Congressman John James and the Democrat Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. Duggan pointed out rising political division, including tensions surrounding the war in Iran, these gas prices. These are key factors, he says, in making it harder for his message of unity to resonate with voters. Voters are mad, and so they don't really want to think about unity. He said in his letter, our internal polling showed the intense anger over gas prices in Iran was boosting Democrats in every office nationally. The chamber poll last week showed that we'd fallen 11 points behind the Democratic candidate, and it reflects that reality. So despite holding multiple town halls each week across the state, getting support from Democrats, Republicans, and independents, Duggan acknowledged that the polling deficits just could not be overcome. So this narrows the field and certainly heightens the interest, Paul, in what is happening here politically.
It narrows the field, which means it narrows our choices.
Yep.
Which is truly unfortunate that that could be affected by national money, that is, money that doesn't care at all about we the people or the state of Michigan. It's money that only cares about racking up wins for a party, Democrat or Republican. That's it. And when Mike Duggan announced he was running, though it was a ballsy, it was a right-on move when he said people are mad at the Democrats and the people are mad at the Republicans. He was right. We were mad at all of them. Who would have guessed that the winds would change with the lightning rod presidency of Donald Trump? And so all of the stuff that he decided to run as an independent on has kind of fallen by the wayside with people now rallying behind the Democratic Party to try to go against everything President Trump wants to do. And, man, it's ugly. It's not good. I don't think it's good for us, Marie, to learn, first of all, how much national money goes into deciding who our governor will be. That's just frightening.
That is a sad reality, and it's been like that for a while. I was just thinking, I wonder if he's going to, and I'm sure it's going to take a while for him to come out publicly and maybe address this type of question, but that is, had he run as a Democrat, had he stayed in the party and run as a Democrat, could he have instituted more change? In other words, change from within, had he made the choice to run as a Democrat instead of going out and trying to do this in an independent fashion. I'm not sure. I wonder how he's going to assess that political move in the months to come as he assesses what has happened here with his run.
I think that's a good question. And I think he was right when he did this, because the winds were terrible for either party. Both parties were in the doghouse. But who could have predicted such a change? Maybe somebody could have. I don't know. But we're going to try. We think he's going to speak at 1:30. That's what we're hearing. Mm-hmm. We're going to carry that live. I don't think he's going to veer off the letter that you referred to and that we have referred to very much. I can almost promise you he's not going to announce a new job. I don't think that's going to happen. He will get a new job, and he'll do great at it, whatever it might be. I have no clue if this is the end of his political career by his choice. I don't know. There's no way to know. Maybe we'll be able to tell.
Say no. That's me personally saying I don't think this is.
You
want to
go further
him.
And say what you think he might run for next?
No, I just don't. Knowing him and how he is, I just don't know that this is the end.
Okay. We're going to find out together, that's for sure. I am not making any guesses anymore because I never would have guessed this was going to happen.
Nobody. Right.
Yeah. Marie Osborne, WJR's Director of Community Affairs and News, with Paul W. Smith in focus, relentless positive radio on the number one station, according to the Michigan Association of Broadcasters, WJR. Well, I stand corrected before I kind of made light of the fact that Raul Castro was being indicted. I mean, he's 94 or something. What are they going to give him life in prison for the next 4 or 6 months, whatever it might be. But the fact of the matter is, we cannot have people doing what he has done, what his family has done, what his people have done. We just can't. We can't stand by no matter how old they are. Rocky Retchkowski, I'm sure, will agree. He's a retired lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army. And you've got a special edition of All Talk with Kevin Dietz on Memorial Day, which we'll get to in a moment. But let's talk about the DOJ indicting former Cuban leader, but still has an iron fist in there, Raul Castro.
Yeah, that's right, Paul W. They sure did. And I truly believe that the reason they did this, the DOJ and the United States government, is truly for a vindication and a show of support for the Cuban diaspora in the United States, as well as to send a message to the Cuban people that we are not against them. We are against the regime that has enslaved them under socialist and communist powers. And the reason why Raul Castro has been indicted is very clear, and no other administration has done this. On February 24th of 1996, three small planes, and you may remember this from 1996, they were the brothers to the rescue. They had these Cessna and Piper Cherokee planes, and these were Cubans that created this organization called Brothers to the Rescue that would depart from Florida in search of Cuban refugees that were stranded at sea. And two of these planes out of the three were shot down by MiG aircraft, by Cuban MiG jet fighters that intercepted these planes and shot them down mercilessly with missiles. And it was at the command of Raul Castro, who was the defense minister and who created this plan. And the planes were not in Cuban territory. They were in international waters. And that's what the indictment says.
Unarmed civilians flying humanitarian missions, looking for people struggling because they wanted so desperately to flee the oppression of Cuba. And they'd go across the Florida Straits, and these guys would swoop down and save them and help them get to freedom. And the bottom line is, and was stated, nations and their leaders cannot be permitted to target Americans, kill them, and not face accountability. Now, it's 30 years, but at least it's accountability. And you can't find a person who isn't for that. You could see the celebration where they could celebrate in Miami. Now, the people in Cuba can't celebrate or they'll be killed. So it's an odd and awkward situation. And here again, as you pointed out, Rocky Rejkowski, this is the first president who's actually doing something about this. But again, I fear that this president is doing some things like this that doesn't really get him any credit, except in this case with a relatively small group of people who have been oppressed and couldn't be with their families and have wanted this kind of a change for 30 or plus years. And, you know, it's not helping the president and his reputation other than those people who want to say, here's a guy who said we keep out of wars and he keeps going into one war after another.
Yeah, but listen, Paul W., there's no statute of limitations on criminal and murderous acts. And this president basically, this administration showed through this, the DOJ, that there's no statute of limitations on that. And to his credit, when you talk about the credit, where will the credit go? Well, in one respect or another, you did look at, when you look at Florida and the potential congressional seats in the midterms that will be coming out of Florida that may be pink, not totally red, but pink, and may have a large Cuban and Hispanic Latino population. This was obviously also done to shore up the Florida voting base as well.
Well, here's hoping they remember. Here's something I remember. You do such a great job for us on Memorial Day. You've done it in the past. And this Memorial Day, Rocky Rejkowski, retired lieutenant colonel of the U.S. Army, will be hosting a very special edition of All Talk with Kevin Dietz. And it will be All Talk and Memorial Day with Rocky Rejkowski. And I salute you for that.
Well, I'm very grateful to Ann Thomas and the leadership of WJR and all of you at WJR for allowing us to do this. This is the fifth annual now.
Wow.
And we will have stories of those that served in combat, those that have remember those that have served in combat or remember loved ones that are on a wall. We'll have a couple individuals that actually are in the news today. We're doing Keith Kellogg as well. He'll be leading it off. Joey Jones from Fox News, you know, he lost both of his legs in Iraq, and a lot of local veterans that have served. We're also going to highlight a organization that's called Salute Our Warriors that has an event at the Packard Proving Grounds in Macomb County on July 10th. You can find them online at saluteourwarriors.com, and that event is going to be filled with veterans. It's always filled with a lot of luminaries that come to that. But my heart goes out to all of you and WJR for allowing us to do this, because it's those that we remember that have fought for our freedom that we will remember, those that will fight for our freedom in the future, and reward them and reward our nation's children with the keys to freedom. So the more we remember our veterans and those that have sacrificed, the more we will be able to serve others.
This is the federal holiday specifically set aside for mourning our U.S. military personnel who died while serving in the United States Armed Forces. And, you know, when there is a holiday, we kind of tend to say, oh, happy Memorial Day. This is not the right thing to say. It's not happy Memorial Day when you consider what Memorial Day is all about. A perfect greeting for today would be like, today, let us remember and honor those who made the ultimate sacrifice for our freedom. And that's a mouthful. So simply, I will say, I wish you a meaningful Memorial Day. And I think you would agree with that, Rocky.
And one that is memorable. So that I totally appreciate you saying that. Let's serve others. Let's remember the sacrifice of those that have died and up for our freedoms, and do something to pay it forward by serving others. That's our goal in life. That's our purpose.
Yep. Be tuned in. Rocky Rejkowski in for Kevin on this Monday, Memorial Day, and from 9 until noon. You'll be glad you did. We continue into the next hour of Focus with Paul W. Smith right here on WJR. All right, hour number two, and we've been jumping around and moving people around because of the expected press conference from the man of the hour, Mike Duggan, who has announced he is no longer running for governor, and catching most all of us off guard, frankly. But we want to hear what he has to say, and he has released a letter. We've talked about it. We've talked to Marie about it. We've talked to the team, Mike Parsons, our executive producer, Danielle Mason, Queen of the Switches, Rich Luzinski, WJR Traffic and Weather First, as you're on your way to making each and every day count. And, of course, Kim reminds us about QTR. We know that each day counts. That's why we make each and every day count. Each day is a gift. But QTR, we don't know at all. Quality time remaining. So bear that in mind as you make your decisions each day. And thanks again for choosing to be a part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. And don't take it just from me. Take it from the Michigan Association of Broadcasters. When you listen to WJR, you listen to, once again, the top radio station in our area that you can't even listen to. And we appreciate that. And we thank Ann Thomas, our fearless leader, and Steve Finitari, Mike, the whole team, but all the people behind the scenes, especially. Now, I make them front and center. I talk about Mike Parsons. A lot of times in the past, people didn't talk about the executive producer or the person running the board, Danielle Mason, or Rich Luzinski, or any of the people that we do talk about. But there are plenty of people we can't talk about, we don't have a chance to talk about, that deserve this award, made it possible for us to win this award. By the way, speaking of guys in the past, Cliff Coleman, who used to do what you do, Danielle, and he earned the name, while you're the Queen of the Switches, he earned the name Fingers Coleman.
I don't know if I like that, but okay.
Well, it's not you, and you've got your own thing.
That's true.
Sounds like a jazz musician.
Yeah, and it was a different time. But he ran the board for JP a long time and added, just like you add to the show, he added to the show. And I got just a very sweet note from him the other day. And maybe we'll get him on, talk about the good old days. Cliff Coleman was a great guy, is a great guy. He was very kind to the show. He was truly an important part of the success of the morning show for all those years. We did the morning show longer than anybody at WJR, believe it or not. And the time went by, which we've heard from a lot of people. Time goes by very quickly. Certainly, our next guest knows that. He's been in the restaurant business all of his life, and the time is going by quickly, but he does not stop adding to his portfolio of great restaurants. He and his lovely wife, Rosalie, Joe Vicari, is on the other end of our line. owner of the Joe Vaccari Restaurant Group. You hear him on Tryon commercials on the air here. But it's true, Joe. That's how we hear about you these days. But the fact of the matter is, we told you some time ago when we learned it, with that new JW Marriott, which will be a great hotel, there's going to be a flagship restaurant, and it's owned by Mr. Joe Vaccari and Rosalie, and his brother John is involved. Joe Muir Seafood will be the flagship restaurant inside the new JW Marriott. Good for you, Joe.
Well, very excited. Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. I hope you're well.
We're doing great. Very excited about being able to go into the JW. What a great location. What a great property to have, you know, in Detroit. We connect to the convention center. We're ecstatic, and I know we're going to do great business there. And, you know, we love the Renaissance Center. We were there since 2011 as Joe Muir and 2004 as Andiamo. But things change, and, you know, you close one door and you open another door, and that's what we did here.
So what you'll be doing is actually yet another new concept, as I understand it from earlier conversations. It'll be Joe Muir Seafood and Chops.
Yes. Originally, quickly, I'll tell you, you know, we were going to go in there and we were going to put a steakhouse in there. This is before we knew what was happening at the Renaissance Center. And we had a cute name. It was going to be called Uppercut Steakhouse in memory of Joe Lewis. So, and then, you know, the world changed and we were talking about it and what brand we should put there. And we just felt that Joe Muir, such an iconic brand in Detroit since 1929, we had to keep it in Detroit. So that's what we did.
Well, I can tell you this. If it's an Andiamo Group restaurant, or the Joe Vaccari Restaurant Group now officially, it's great because all your Andiamos are great. And your Joe Muir Seafoods and now Joe Muir Seafood and Chops, I know, is going to be spectacular.
It is. We're again, very excited. We did this a little bit with our Andiamo brand. We added Andiamo pasta and chops. So a couple of our restaurants are specializing in prime beef, lamb, pork, and obviously prime beef steaks. And we're going to do the same at the Joe Muir. Funny, there'll be a good trivia question, is the number one item that is sold at Joe Muir restaurants is our filet.
Well, that's, and you know what? Most people, when they think of your Andiamos, they think of pasta. When they think, obviously, of Joe Muir, you think seafood because it's always been in the name. Now seafood and chops. That's good. Right. I mean, I, for one, I like seafood, but I really like chops. So that's all good news. And I really like the news because you just never stop. Is Rosalie trying to get you to stop?
Yes, she is.
Your daughter, Teresa, who we happily have in the family here working at WJR, I know she says, Dad, enough already. But you've bought yet another restaurant that we've broadcast from a number of times. You bought Hook, which is closer to my neck of the woods.
Yes. Well, we actually right now are just, this year we're going to be the management group there. So we're going to run the restaurant. And at the end of the season, we're going to sit down with Tom Lozon, who's the owner there. And we're going to decide if we're going to continue or if we're going to put a different brand, a different concept there. So it's exciting. You know, I've been on that strip for like 27 years, and it's great in the summer. And in the wintertime, it's, you know, the streets close up a little bit. So we got to come up with a concept that's going to be sustainable year round. So that's what we're thinking about.
So how many restaurants now?
You know, it depends what week it is, but I think it's 24.
And then what do you do after lunch?
Yeah, right.
You're so busy. 24 restaurants, and they're all fabulous. So congratulations to you. This is big. The Joe Muir Seafood and Chops concept, flagship restaurant inside the new JW Marriott. God bless you, Joe. Give my love to Rosalie as well.
Thank you, Paul. Have a great weekend.
You do the same for this very special holiday, a meaningful Memorial Day weekend to us all. We continue looking toward a 1:30 press conference with the man of the hour who shook the earth with his announcement he's no longer running for governor, Mayor Mike Duggan. Stay with us. Again, at 1:30, we were told there will be a press conference from Mike Duggan, who made the announcement that he is dropping out of his bid to be governor. And believe me, we're going to carry that if, in fact, it happens at 1:30. We'll carry it live for you right here on WJR. Todd Flood, managing partner of Flood Law, PLLC, host of Behind the Bench with Todd Flood right here on WJR. Good afternoon, Todd. It's always a pleasure.
Pleasure is mine, Paul W. I'm sad to hear about Mike Duggan. I think the world of him. I think he would be a great governor. But
I do too. And you must have been as shocked as we were.
I was. I heard about it, and I was. I was shocked. You know, I mean, it's all about raising money, I would imagine. But it's sad. Sad because I think he would be a great candidate for the state of Michigan.
I agree. This is one less great candidate that we could choose from. And I'm really disappointed to be reminded how much out-of-state money comes into play for electing our governor of the great state of Michigan, meaning people who don't give a rat's behind about us or the state only care about being able to put a D or an R next to that list.
That's the truth. It's politics at its finest. It's, you know, we're a pivotal state and national funding coming in to influence, you know, what we have going on in this state, as opposed to what's in the best interest of our citizens here in this state. And you know, let's face it, Mike Duggan did an insanely amazing job in every position he held, be it the mayor. I worked for him when I was a prosecutor. He was amazing. DMC, he was amazing. Just imagine, and the energy this guy has. I would be working, and he would call about, you know, drug houses. Hey, what are we doing on this street at such and such time? It would be like 11 o'clock on a Saturday evening or whatever the case may be. The guy's constantly working. So I am sad that our citizens don't get to see him become a governor for this fine state.
Well, we're in the same boat, because I've known him for years and through all of his different positions and jobs in serving the people, and he has always been outstanding. I have no reason to believe he'd be anything but outstanding as our next governor. Meanwhile, with what we have scheduled you for, who can blame these two police officers who defended the U.S. Capitol during the January 6, 2021 riot, have sued President Donald Trump yesterday, seeking to block the new $1.8 billion lawfare fund set up by the Department of Justice to compensate Trump allies who claim they were victims of prosecutorial overreach. Now, here's a couple of guys that were beaten up by these people, and they're saying, wait a second, you're not going to reward these people with money, our money, are you?
Yeah, I mean, you can't make this up. First and foremost, who puts a fund together for people that, you know, wanted to attack the Capitol Hill and then, you know, were prosecuted? I don't know. This whole thing is crazy. So here's the legal rub. You got two gentlemen that were wearing a badge and a uniform for our Capitol who were injured. Now the question becomes a legal word. Do they have standing to prevent those others, the people that caused a lot of this ruckus, do they have standing to prevent them from collecting funds? I think the $64 million question, that will be heard in court, and they have a legitimate objection because why? They are the real victims. They were the ones that had sustained the injury.
Right.
But I doubt, you know, I doubt in the legal hurdles that they will be able to press forward and prevent this fund from moving forward. I think Congress is the only one that could potentially make that happen, but they kind of sat on their hands on this. So the fact of the matter is this fund that's been put together is going to be basically a mass tort fund. So this is what will happen. You'll get a pool of people that will have to go in front of a panel through their lawyers. Usually it's all in writing, and they'll talk about their injuries and what they had to sustain by being prosecuted or being weaponized. What their claim is that the government was weaponized to go after them. So then they're going to be, it's going to be a measure of compensation and a measure of injury. I think the two gentlemen, bravo to them, but I don't think they will get far because they're going to have big issues on whether or not they have legitimate standing to go forward.
I'm glad I'm not a Republican or an independent, for that matter, running for anything right now, because the president seems to keep stepping in it and bringing things to attention and to the light that can be so used against him so easily. For example, if you dig into this latest, supposedly his lawfare fund also includes that for the rest of his life and his family's lives, they cannot be investigated by the IRS. I guess the reason he's doing that is he knows that the minute, even after the minute the Democrats are in charge, they're going to do that. They're going to investigate him and his family and all of his business dealings. He knows that because they've done it before and they can't wait to do it again.
In essence, yeah, they are putting a blanket over the potential for any kind of looking behind the curtain. And that's a big part of this. So, I feel like I'm living in Ozland at times.
We got to run.
The normalcy.
We got to run, Todd. I appreciate you always. The flood law.
My pleasure, my man.
Todd Flood. We continue. WJR. Well, I'm sorry. Is he talking?
Yeah, he just got up to
the
podium.
All right, let's go to Mayor Mike Duggan. We're catching it from his Facebook page. Here we go.
They came in and had to build from scratch a statewide network, and how they put together an organization to have 150 community meetings and town halls in every corner of the state, including some communities I never heard of before, and built out a terrific infrastructure. I'll never be able to thank all of you and the fundraising team that last year raised more money than the major party candidates, 94% of it for the people from the state of Michigan. It's quite an accomplishment. But despite all of that, I'm standing here today where we don't feel like there is a gap. And I never ran to this part. I was trying to change politics, as Mayor Lucy said. I told everybody to get it. If there comes a point where I don't think there's a path forward, I won't continue to pursue it. It was a remarkable run. The day we started up through February.
Last year, raised more money than the major party candidates, 94% of it from people from the state of Michigan. It was quite an accomplishment. But despite all of that, we're standing here today where we don't feel like there is a path forward. And I never ran to be a spoiler. I was trying to change politics, and as Mayor LaRusso said, I told everybody from the beginning, if there comes a point where I don't think there's a path forward, I won't continue to pursue it. It was a remarkable run from the day we started up through February. The crowds got bigger. We gained almost every month in the polls, pulled into a dead even, and the polling in February showed that 65% of Republicans and 65% of Democrats in Michigan were open to supporting an independent. You could feel every place I went that there was a sense in this state that they want problems solved. The toxic Republican-Democratic fighting in Lansing was holding them back. But everybody here has seen how the national climate has changed in the last 2 months. And, President Trump started a war in Iran. Gas prices went up over $5 a gallon, and people are angry, in particular Democrats, and a lot of independents are angry. And I could see it in the town halls, and that I was getting more and more questions. How can we be sure that you won't split the vote and give it to Republicans. And I would explain over and over that you could vote in Michigan, straight ticket Democrat, and vote for me, and those votes would all count. It didn't have to disrupt your support nationally. And it would work at every town hall. People would take the petition packets, they'd sign up, the unions would sign up. If I had an hour to spend with everybody, we were doing fine. But of course, we have a state with 4 million voters, and we got a poll back in April that said I was down 5 points. That's the first time in a year and a half I dropped in any poll, and it was a shift to Democrats. And the polling showed my favorability was still as high, but people were really angry at what was going on in Washington, and Democrats were focusing on fighting back. And we called pollsters nationally, and they said, we're seeing everything the same way in America. The Democratic candidates at all levels are surging because of the anger on the national stage. And they said, are you in for some headwinds? And it turned out they were right. And when the last poll came out from the chamber that said we were down 11 points, and again, the Republican, where I've been campaigning outstate, is continuing to climb. But there is a major shift in this country to people who may have been unhappy with the Democratic Party, but right now are very focused on the immediate challenges coming out of Washington. And so we had to deal with reality that we were 11 points down and slipping. And the question was, do we have the resources to get to everybody, explain to them, you can vote Mike for independent and vote the rest of the ticket. It doesn't have to change anything. But we are dealing with the reality of fundraising. And while I was really proud in the December fundraising that 94% of our money came from the state of Michigan, we knew we had to build a national fundraising network. The Republicans and Democrats have enormous resources. Everybody knew that. I have been all over this country with everybody who has expressed interest in independent campaigns, and there's a lot of interest. But as I've learned, funding for independent candidacies nationally is still in its infancy. And we had to recognize the reality that if we were going to compete, it was going to have to be asking the Michigan donors to double down on what they'd already done. And so my son Ed, our campaign manager, and I, over the last week, we've been looking at these numbers every way that we are. We're saying, is there a path to win? And the truth of the matter is, when you're down 11 points and you're down in the fundraising, the path is not realistic. We said, can we in good conscience go to our volunteers, our donors, and say, double down on what you've done? And in our own minds, we didn't feel confident there was a path, and we couldn't in good conscience ask them to do that. And so what we're doing today is just, today is facing reality, which is to say, I want to say thank you to everybody who's done this. I absolutely believed in February we were going to win this election, and it was going to be by a large margin. Today, I can't say that. So I spent the last nearly 18 hours or so calling many of the supporters to thank them for what they've done. I am hopeful that this campaign will have an impact. Even at 23%, that means 1.6 million Michigan voters are so angry at the two parties, they want to see change. They want to see problems solved instead of the toxic fighting. And I am very hopeful that you will see Republican and Democratic candidates this fall embrace that. And I've talked to a number of them already today, and I've said the same thing. I'm not going to do anything before the primary, but if there are candidates in this state that take up the message of fixing the schools, fixing affordable housing, getting the jobs of the future by working together, I'm going to be open to endorsing them in the fall campaign. And so I'm going to be watching along with a whole lot of my supporters in the hopes that it proves that this campaign made a lasting difference. But that's where we are now, I broke the news to the staff this morning, and I can't say, these folks have been day and night, and for them it wasn't a job. They really believed that we could change politics in Michigan, and we're going to keep at it in different ways. And with that, I'll take any questions. Go ahead. Yeah, I have had zero conversation with anybody about any job, so I can't control what's out there, but it's only been the last 48 hours that we realized we were going to do this, and I have not talked to anybody about any job.
Sir, yeah. Jordan Hermey, Bridge, Michigan.
At this point, the question is going to be in the fall, not the primary, because right in the primary, the Democrats and Republicans are trying to win their nominations. Question is going to be in the fall. Do we see candidates focus less on attacking each other and more about working together? And I'll make my judgment based on how the campaigns go in the fall. Whether they want my endorsement is the first question, or the second question is, but I do think you're going to see particularly state reps, state senate, maybe some congressional candidates start to move in the direction that I think a whole lot of Michigan residents want. Stop trashing the other party and let's start solving our problems. Yeah.
What would you say to people who are planning to vote for you now they feel lost?
I'm sorry I couldn't do better for you. I mean, that's the thing is we've, my son Ed, as you may know, is my campaign manager. I sat down on Saturday and we just said, okay, let's figure out the plan. And you're here?
Right.
So I said, Ed, no nonsense, just tell me honestly what you think. And he said, I haven't been wanting to say it out loud, but he says, right now, I don't see a path. He said, what do you think? And I said, I haven't wanted to say it out loud either, but I'm reaching the same conclusion. And once we realized that we saw things the same way, we said, but you're going to have a chance to watch candidates. It's going to be absolutely fascinating to see if the Republicans and Democrats look up and say, 23% of the people were rejecting both parties. There's a huge constituency there. And are the voices going to emerge that are going to embrace that constituency? If they do, I'll support them. And if they don't, I'll sit it out. But I'm optimistic you're going to see people move based on the conversations I've had today. Go ahead. Let's try to take everybody data. What I've learned is this. There's an enormous support for it. There's not a national fundraising infrastructure for it. Somebody is going to break through, but I'll make a prediction. It's somebody who's got the wealth to be self-funded. I think the first person who breaks through is going to be the person who can self-fund because it's the right message. It's what Americans want. But the Republicans and Democrats have done a phenomenal job over the years of building really great national fundraising networks. So somebody will follow me.
Are you saying that there's a public clamor for somebody who's rich enough to support their own campaign right now in this climate?
I'm saying there is a national clamor for somebody who will stand up and say, I'm tired of the two parties fighting with each other. We can solve problems together and has the resources to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's 48 hours. Sonia is planning a trip, so we've been discussing it. And two of my kids have called the planned trips. It has been, since the day I declared for mayor, I have basically been around the clock the last 12, 13 years. And so right now I'm gonna spend some time making up for lost time with the family. ML? In February, when I was at 30, I absolutely believed that 40% was achievable. I was at 30%, and 65% of Republicans and Democrats were saying they were open. And if you've seen those town halls, people are so frustrated with their children not reading in school. They are enormously frustrated. Young people can't afford housing in every corner of this state. When I go up to Marquette and they can't fill entry-level hospital positions because the workers can't afford the housing, there are people hurting who want Lansing to solve their problems everywhere. And so I had a goal from the beginning, was to get 20% from the right, 20% from the left, and win by 40. And in February, we were way ahead of that schedule. But there are some things you can't control. Yeah.
This week in Detroit, we learned that removing and replacing the dirt at a single home demolition site, a neighborhood demolition site, costs $52,000 at one single house. That was three times what you said it would in December. And obviously, the suspected sites of contamination have grown since that news conference you had on your way out the door. Some people have said you've left the city with quite a large bill and really potentially a public health crisis. Did that play a role in your decision?
So I have done 30 town halls in the last 30 days, at least 2,000 people, and answered every question. Dirt did not come up in a single one of them. It is not on the voters' minds. And I am confident Mayor Sheffield will handle it appropriately, and I'm confident the money was left behind to take care of it. Yes. Yeah. So there was going to be one. I have four more unions we haven't announced yet. No matter what day we did this, that was a problem. And so I've got a lot of announcements that we just aren't going to make. But it didn't matter what day. Whatever day it was one day after a fundraiser, one day before an announcement. Once we came to the conclusion there wasn't a path, I just couldn't see going to donors and supporters anymore. And saying that I believe I can win. I need your help. Yeah.
You're listening to WJR and Mayor Mike Duggan dropping out of the Michigan gubernatorial race.
Not looking beyond right now too far. Do you see yourself pursuing, trying to build that national network?
I'm not thinking along those lines at all. Right. I'm just right now. I haven't thought. I've literally given no thought to anything beyond getting through today and calling and thanking everybody.
But is there
yeah.
Again,
I just don't.
I want to
tell you the human side of this. Literally 18 months, every waking moment, I've been campaigning. I told the staff at 9:30 this morning, so if there was a union announcement, it was because they didn't know yet that we were pulling out. We're dealing right now with just getting through today. I've given no thought to what I'm doing after that. I just really, up to the last 48 hours, I was just consumed by the campaign. Yeah. Again, when you see huge national trends, and it is surging for Democrats nationally. If you aren't aware of that, you're missing what's going on in this country right now. Trump's at an all-time low in favorability. Democratic energy is at an all-time high. So I ask the question, do you think it is going to get less partisan as we go to November? And in our judgment, it's going to get more partisan. But when you're at 11 points and dropping, and you know you're at a financial disadvantage because you can't raise national money, you make a reasonable decision. And if I were sitting with you tomorrow and you were saying, hey, I'm thinking about donating to your campaign, I have to, in my own mind, believe I have a real path forward. 2013, I sat with people when I'd been thrown off the ballot and running for mayor. I saw the path forward. You could the momentum of change, and I had no hesitation saying, I think I can win this right, and I think I can get elected mayor. With what's happening today with the huge national headwinds, I just couldn't honestly say that to people. Again, I am running, and I was running to change, and both parties are to blame. And, this is something the Democrats think about. If you base your entire campaign on attacking Donald Trump and the Republicans, we'll have 2020 all over again. I mean, the Democrats won the presidency, the U.S. Senate, and the U.S. House on a campaign that was completely, we hate Donald Trump. 4 years later, all those Democrats were swept out, and you had a Republican president, a Republican House, and a Republican Senate. And the things I'm saying to the Democrats is, you have to have something that you stand for positively. How are you going to fix the schools? How are you going to fix the affordable housing? Don't get yourself elected. It's easy to get yourself elected hating the other side. But you can't govern that way. And we've seen it over and over. And I'm going to wait until tries that. Yes?
You mentioned earlier of the idea of being a spoiler in the race. Did you worry that staying in it?
Yeah. 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 I didn't. I wasn't running. I was running because I thought I could. I wasn't going to tip this race one way or another to spoiler. That was never going to happen. Yeah.
I know you talked to your son, but did you seek any opinions from others?
Oh, yeah. We've talked to pollsters, analysts around the country, and everybody. The headwinds are enormous, and they're still coming. And when you see Trump cancel audits for his family, it just adds to those headwinds. And as we looked at this, say, the Democrats in Michigan, who in February were completely focused on, we need to change this toxic tube, are now, all you have to do is talk to them, extremely angry at what's happening in D.C., yeah. Yeah, again, it's the same thing. I mean, the Republicans aren't any better. I mean, they've raised attack ads to an art form themselves. And you're seeing this right now, right? Look at how this country has gone. Trump came in and canceled everything Obama did. Biden came in and canceled what Trump did. Trump came in and canceled what Biden did. And in Michigan, we've seen it go back and forth between the Republicans and Democrats in the legislature. This country and this state are not well served by a toxic two-party system that swings back and forth. Teaching third graders to read is not Republican or Democrat. Teach the kids the phonics. Get them in the small class sizes. Get intense tutoring when they start to... I don't know why Republicans and Democrats can't agree on those things. I'm going to see if they do. Yes. You know, I believe that you will probably see, if you add in the Democratic and Republican Governors Association, the Democratic 21st Century Fund and the Republican Administrative Fund and all those huge dark money accounts in the campaigns, I think I would expect you're going to see upwards of $80 million in these Democratic and Republican governors races. My guess is when you add it all in, it'll come close to that. I didn't need $80 million to compete, but... it had to be more competitive than it was. Yeah.
Hey, Doug, given the mission that had you running and the disappointment of today, what could you say is the biggest lesson that you learned from
this campaign? It is hard for you the power of being in a town hall in Beaverton, Michigan, on Saturday night where I was, and they had to keep bringing chairs into the room because of the size of the crowd. And then to see all folks when I was done take my petition packets and take them out. There are people in this state change and are willing to work for it. And I'm hoping you'll see the Democratic and Republican candidates reach out and embrace those folks. Because that's, at this point, you could have a major national leader emerge from the state if they found a way to reach across the aisle and solve things in a bipartisan way. Go ahead. Yeah.
Press conference from former Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan on why he's dropping out or has dropped out of the Michigan gubernatorial race on WJR Radio. Sorry you can't hear the questions. They don't have microphones for those people asking questions.
You know, it wasn't, I didn't go in with that strategy, but it was a debate. And when the candidate speaking ahead of me said things I knew were inconsistent, I was a high school debater. My instincts kicked in, and I pointed out inconsistencies, but it wasn't anything other than that. Okay. Oh, we were still debating on Monday whether we were exploring everything. We were calling folks, trying to find a way. We weren't just going to give up in a day, but we have spent the last 4 or 5 days in intense conversations with people around the state, people nationally. Are we missing something? Is there a theory? Do you see a change in national trends? And basically everything we heard up through yesterday, and we were really debating till yesterday afternoon, was we just can't honestly say to folks, we think we have a way to go. Yes, go ahead, in the back. No. I got asked that question for the last year. I think there's a good chance I could have won as a Democrat. I don't think I could have changed politics that way. The nature of it is, when you're running as a Democratic governor, you're trying to elect Democratic reps and Democratic senators. And when you get there, all the Republicans are against you because you tried to beat them. And, of course, as you know, there's a segment of the left wing of the Democratic Party that isn't particular fans of mine anyway. I would have gotten to the governorship and been unable to govern. And we've seen it here. It's been, these guys can't pass a budget on time. I'd have been in the same boat. I really thought the only hope for this state was to get to a place where the far right and the far left had every right to express their opinion, but that we could solve the problems with a coalition from the center. And, And so if I were coming to you and asking you for a check to support that, and you look me in the eye and said, Mike, do you think you have a path? What am I going to say? Right? And this is the conversation I've been having with all the big donors is any other candidate would have said, keep giving us money and kept going. In my own mind, when I felt there wasn't a path, I felt like I had to be honest enough to say to all the people who trust me, there are people, and Ed and I were talking about this. I said, when they're looking at the numbers, I can't believe how many people are still supporting us. He says, you forget, you were the guy that had a write-in for the city of Detroit and won. They think you have a plan. And I realized people were relying on my judgment that I thought I could win. And I just felt like I had to be honest when that judgment changed. That may be the wrong decision, but that's how I felt. One last question. Go ahead. I didn't want to be a spoiler for anybody. But the point at which I wasn't going to win, then all that was going to happen was I was going to take more from one side or the other. So go ahead. Do you have something else?
Do you have the signatures?
Yeah, we're at 35,000 now. It's been unbelievable. I think we got 1,000 people who have called in and taken them. So 6 weeks ago, I was concerned about the signatures. We got 35,000 now. We'd had 50,000 by the middle of June. That wasn't an issue, it turned out. So thank you, but I want to say thank you to everyone. Got them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Every single one of them said, we haven't had a political candidate who called us before, and instead of asking for more money, said, honestly, I don't see a path. Everybody was just so enormously supportive. A lot of very emotional conversation. A lot of people who said to me, I'm going to be with you whatever you do next in your life. But people seemed to appreciate it. They were very surprised.
We closed out Focus on WJR with
the honesty. And when they got the letter and saw the letter.
A press conference of Mayor Mike Duggan dropping out of the Michigan gubernatorial race. Stand by for JR Afternoon with Ryan Ermani on WJR Detroit. Regards, Paul W. Smith.